This tape concerns the correction of body chemistry. We'll first discuss the principles of correction, then the process of correction, and finally, techniques of correction. We'll begin by talking about the principles of stress that have been discussed on previous tapes. One principle that we might as well make explicit, because it often isn't explicit and we use it implicitly, is that perfect health is the normal state of the body. That if the body is always doing its best to attain perfect health, given what it has, given the amount and the intensity of stress that it is under. The body usually, however, has had to develop energy-draining adaptations. If we, as therapists, physicians, can provide the factor that is needed, the body can start giving up its biochemical compensations and will automatically move toward an improved state of health. We are not doing the healing. The body does the healing itself when supplied with whatever it needs. That's the body's normal function. All we do as therapists is make the conditions favorable for healing to take place. So we could state again the principle that the body is doing its best under stress. It is in its best homeostatic state that it is capable of attaining, given the conditions it is presently under. A corollary of this principle is that symptoms of discomfort are generally an expression of the body's adaptation to stress. Inflammation, aches and pains, even tumors, these are actually symptoms of adaptation. A major goal that we have in correction is to remove unnecessary or detrimental stress. And there are many types of such stressors continually acting on the body. While there are many kinds of stressors of every kind, emotional, physical, and environmental, we will focus on biochemical stressors. These stressors include nutritional deficiencies, excesses in toxic substances, incorrect proportions of fat, protein, and carbohydrate, and other nutrients in the diet. However, as we discuss them, it is important to remember that there are other kinds of stressors. For example, a deranged skeletal structure can also act as a stressor. The body's electromagnetic energy flows may be out of balance. There are oriental sciences, acupuncture, etc., which work with these well-documented energy flows. Any imbalance or blockage in these flows can create adaptive stress. There's a stress resulting from destructive attitudes we carry, and other emotional stresses or strains we put on ourselves. Then there are other external stressors, which we must endeavor to remove also. These may be caused by lifestyle factors, job, home, family, friends, and relationships. However, we will focus mostly in this tape on the biochemical stressors. So the first principle is the body will heal itself given the opportunity, that health is the normal state. The second principle is that what we are really doing is a negative process of removing detrimental stressors, thus relieving the body of continuously having to adapt for them or to them. Adaptation requires and depletes energy, and therefore when the needs for adaptation are removed, the body will have increased energy and will heal. A third principle is the energy concept as before, that biochemical energy is required for healing. This is a very simple idea, but it is central. We endeavor to increase the availability of biochemical energy in the body. How do we do this? One, we remove blockages in the function of the energy pathways from start to finish. And two, we improve the balance of what is called the combustion rate or oxidation rate. We find empirically it's the metabolic rate is deviant, just like the RPM of the engine. The energy output of the body is severely reduced. So these are the very simple principles of correction. The process of correction involves a few concepts that are also important for the successful use of the program. One of the corrective process ideas is that there are layers of adaptations and compensations. We discussed some of this in the previous tape. It's not a matter of lifting off stresses and the body immediately heals. The body has changed through a process of adaptation and compensation. These changes may have gone on for years. They may have started at birth because we were born nutritionally deficient. Toxic metals may have been present at birth. Certain structural difficulties, emotionally attitudes, may have begun at an early age. So these adaptive processes have gone on throughout our lives. We have to undo or reverse those processes. The analogy that seems simplest is that of floating a heavily laden ship. It is though you come into life or into the present like a ship that is loaded down with excess baggage. And we're going to make it light. We're going to unload it. Unloading has to be accomplished one step at a time. It can't be done in one shot. It's just too much. There are layers like the first deck, the second deck, and the third deck. And they're all filled with compensations and adaptations. So this means there's going to be a time factor. Anyone who presupposes that you can become well in a short period of time, a month or even a year, is kidding himself. Many symptomatic nutritional approaches and other healing approaches offer a quick cure. But to really achieve a high level of health requires several years for the majority of people. Patience is required. If you're responsible, you'll explain that to your patients when they begin. You are just not going to undo the multitude of adaptations in a short period of time. There is often a dramatic increase in health in a relatively short time. Some people are less burdened than others, just as some ships are less laden than others. So there are some variations. Keep in mind that time and patience are so important. Another principle of compensation and the process of healing is that the body will proceed always at its own pace. We cannot govern this factor. There is no accurate way to predict or say to a person, you will be all right in a year or 2 years. Again, using the ship analogy, there may be a lot of undesirable cargo that we can't see from the surface. For example, a person may come in complaining of sore joints and stomach aches, and that's it. But there may be many other things wrong with that person that they are not cognizant of. Maybe they have a cancer that's starting to metastasize. Maybe they have a hardening of the arteries that's hidden. The arthritis and the stomach ache may be the least important of their problems compared to hidden physical dysfunctions. Even though these may be the most important to the patient as far as irritating symptomatology. So when we begin to correct imbalances, the body will take care of things in the correct order, the most important order, dictated by the natural body wisdom. People may say after a year, I still have my arthritis. But you have to question them carefully because many other symptoms may have improved. The body proceeds at its own pace and has its own order of correction. Again, patience is required, and realize that what you would like corrected first is not necessarily the body's priority. Another concept to do with correction process is that the process of correction of imbalances is not going to be a smooth one. It's going to have its ups and downs. It's a little like when you unload a ship. Let's say it has a lot of heavy crates on it, and you unload one crate from one side. The ship may list to the other side. It may upset the whole apple cart temporarily. Then when you remove another piece of cargo from the front, the whole back of the ship may sink down and the front may rise up. The whole ship may rock back and forth as these adaptations and compensations are unloaded or corrected. So it's not a smooth process, and anyone sitting on the ship while you're unloading these heavy things, especially if you unload a very huge one, is going to feel those ups and downs resulting from the unloading process. This is an important part of correction, and this is why we devoted an entire tape to the healing reactions, or retracing as it is called, which is really the expression of what I'm describing here. Another analogy would be that if you had a car engine that wasn't running right and you started tinkering with all the adjustments of the carburetor, the engine will slow down, speed up, and might even stall out when you turn a couple of screws too far one way or the other. This is exactly what happens to people when we start tinkering with their body chemistry. Patients will experience days when they feel exhausted, Then there'll be days when they will feel quite energetic. Other days they'll get a stomach ache or a rash on their chest. Then the next day they may get a runny nose. Because as they go through the correction process, these healing or retracing reactions occur. These reactions are not dangerous, and they usually pass in a short time. This fact, however, points to the importance of retesting. So I'd like to spend a moment on that. It is, again, like unloading the ship. You periodically have to step back and say, well, what's the next step? The retest will show us what the next steps are. If you just start working in the front of the ship and keep unloading the whole front without unloading the back, the ship might sink. In the body, the way it works is that if you proceed unevenly, the healing process will stop, because the body, unlike the ship, has its own internal regulators, and if you try unloading too much from one part, the body will say, no more of that. That would be dangerous. So it's important to retest every 3 months. Some people can go up to 6 months because they don't change too fast. Other individuals change very rapidly. Some individuals may say, the program isn't working. It's making me feel worse. Every time I take the supplements, I get sick. And sometimes it's making them sick because it's causing a toxic metal elimination. We should then proceed at a slower pace. Often they develop reactions because the entire structure, the entire chemistry has shifted, and therefore they require a different supplement program. The therapist or physician must stay in touch with these changes by retesting and make sure the patient remains in touch with you. If the person will not stay in touch and these reactions occur, the person is liable to become discouraged or feel that the doctor doesn't know what he's doing because he's getting worse. You will lose that person as a patient. So these are a couple of ideas on the process of correction. It takes time. It's not smooth. The body corrects symptoms in its own order and at its own pace. Now we'll talk specifically about techniques of correction. We first need to learn how to interpret or look at a hair test. The tape series is designed to be used with analytical research laboratories' computerized hair analysis, interpretation, and corrective programs. Before anything else, make sure all the test values on your test make sense, that they are within reasonable ranges. If they are not, it's worth giving a call to the laboratory. If something does seem off, the lab will be happy to retest the hair sample. The second step is to look over the entire chart as a whole. Observe the oxidation rate, the toxic metal levels, and compare them with what you know about the person. If you've gotten to know the person through a consultation, if you've done some physical testing such as orthostatic blood pressure, Sargent's white line test, or the Rogoff sign, these tests will help confirm and give you a better concept of the picture of the chemistry. For those who are not familiar, the Sargent's white line test consists of taking a sharp object, such as a fork, and run it across the skin of the forearm. In a fast oxidizer, generally the marks will turn red within a short period of time, 15 to 20 seconds. With a slow oxidizer, it usually will not. It may take a minute or two. The Rogoff sign consists of shining a light in the pupil of the eye. The fast oxidizer's pupil will contract and remain contracted for a period of time. In a very slow oxidizer, the pupil will contract, but it will quickly open up again. These tests serve as rough guides to the function of the adrenal glands. They also give an indication of sympathetic nervous system, which is involved in the pupil reflex. When taking the blood pressure, first take it when the patient is sitting or laying down. Have the patient stand up and immediately take the blood pressure again. A drop in blood pressure indicates that the adrenal glands are not functioning up to par. With these supplementary tests, you can usually confirm the hair analysis reports, although this is not always the case. Something may possibly be obscuring the picture, such as high amounts of hidden toxic metals. It is always wise to bear in mind that the first picture you will get from a hair analysis report is usually incomplete. There are layers of compensation that you won't see, going back to the process we talked about, where there are layers of adaptation which are obscured or hidden. The first hair analysis chart is only providing a surface picture of what is showing up at the time that the hair analysis is taken. Don't worry about that. If you're the type of person that can't do anything until you have all the facts, then this science is not for you. One of the problems in medicine sometimes is that we want to know everything exactly before we begin treatment. That is understandable in medicine because so many of the medications and surgical procedures are potentially dangerous, and we would not want to move ahead with a potentially dangerous medication or surgical procedure until we have all the facts and we're very sure of ourselves. However, with hair analysis, it's not so critical because we're not using such toxic or potentially dangerous substances. We find from a practical viewpoint that because of the layers of adaptation going on, it is impossible to know all the possible hidden factors. You just correct what you see at the present time and retest every few months so as to remain on target. It has been my experience that the hair analysis is usually a better indicator than my physical tests or questions. When I've trusted my physical tests or questions, the results have not been as good, as a general rule, as trusting the hair analysis, even if the hair analysis seems very strange. Now we can go on to more specific techniques. The two things we're going to correct are blockages or interferences in the energy pathway and the oxidation rate, represented by the ratios of calcium to potassium and of sodium to magnesium. First, we'll go over the energy pathway. The more steps we can correct in the energy pathway, the better. The pathway begins with the food we eat and includes all the steps in its utilization and metabolism. We'll begin with diet. Before going into specific foods required for specific oxidation types, we need to point out that it's not only the type of food that's eaten, but also the individual's food habits. You would be amazed at the atrocious food habits people have. It's a little shocking to me how many families don't eat together any longer because of work schedules or whatever. So many people have irregular habits, eating on the run, eating while driving 50 miles an hour, etc. These habits will affect the way these individuals utilize their food, putting junk food into the body, skipping meals because they're busy with some silly thing, and so on. In other words, the emphasis in our society today has shifted away from good eating habits. And this can be an important factor in a person's health. Proper digestion of the food we eat is very important, and we're able to support digestion by giving digestive enzymes. Slow oxidizers receive betaine hydrochloride pepsin because they're generally low in hydrochloric acid. Betaine hydrochloride is made from beets and helps to replace the hydrochloric acid. Fast oxidizers receive pancreatic and liver enzymes. The slow oxidizer may also take pancreatic enzymes if he desires. A restful place, a relaxed, peaceful frame of mind during mealtime is important for optimal digestion. Avoiding excess liquids at meals can also be important for slow oxidizers because the liquids may dilute the stomach acid and impair digestion. Certain food combinations may be difficult to digest. However, it's best not to make a fetish of food combinations because the person usually will end up not eating very much. The next step in the energy pathway is absorption and assimilation. The pH of the intestinal tract has to be correct for optimal breakdown and absorption of foods and nutrients. Also, adequate amounts of the proper enzymes must be present for nutrients to be absorbed. The nutrients that we give in supplements are comparatively in a relatively absorbable form, such as chelated minerals, which are preferable to some other mineral forms that are used. The transport of nutrients via the blood from intestine to liver to tissue sites and the transport across cell membranes must also proceed smoothly. The correct sodium and potassium levels are important for nutrient transport across cell membranes. Adequate liver function is extremely important for converting absorbed nutrients into the appropriate biochemical compounds, either for storage or for body use. a sluggish or congested liver will be helped by the GB3 formula, which contains bile acids. Once within the cells, the steps of the energy production cycles, the glycolysis and Krebs cycles, need to be supported. The three types of metabolic packs designed for fast, slow, and mixed oxidizers are designed to contain the general nutrient factors required for optimum cellular metabolism in each of these three oxidation types. We'll discuss these packs in more detail later. Now we'll talk about correcting the electrolytes. Before we correct the oxidation rates, we'll look at two important ratios which must be corrected. The first is the sodium to potassium ratio. The sodium to potassium ratio is extremely important. We consider this ratio to be the most critical ratio on a chart. Many programs are sometimes designed specifically to correct only this particular ratio. Such is its importance. The normal sodium-potassium ratio is 2.5 to 1. When the sodium level is either too high or too low relative to potassium, it is associated, Dr. Eck has found, with kidney problems, liver problems, adrenal gland problems, and emotional problems. In general, a high sodium-to-potassium ratio is associated with anxiety and inflammation. A low sodium-potassium ratio is associated with frustration, indecision, emotional burnout. The way the program is correcting this ratio is by giving highly selected minerals and vitamins, which, because of their action, tend to alter these levels. For example, if there is a low sodium-to-potassium ratio, the patient is given nutrients that will raise the sodium and or lower the potassium. These may include vitamin B6, vitamin C, vitamin E, manganese, iron, copper, molybdenum, calcium, vitamin B12, an adrenal glandular substance. Chromium may also be given to raise the sodium-potassium ratio, especially if there are symptoms of diabetes, or if there is a very low chromium, or a very high chromium, indicating that there is a chromium loss. These are some of the nutrient factors that would be given to balance a low sodium to potassium ratio. We might also give the product renamide, which contains kidney glandular substance with other specific nutrients. The renamide helps to support the kidneys, which can be causing the low sodium to potassium ratio. Another product that is given is called Lymcomin. It consists of lymph, thymus, spleen, glandular substance, with manganese, copper, zinc, vitamin A, vitamin C, B6, and magnesium. Lymcomin is designed also to help raise sodium and balance the sodium to potassium ratio. Certain foods which may tend to balance this ratio can be recommended as well. When the sodium-potassium ratio is high, a different set of nutrients or more of a different set is given. These include zinc, vitamin A, magnesium, and potassium. The reason is that these nutrients have a tendency to lower sodium or raise potassium levels. A second ratio that we correct is the calcium to magnesium ratio. The ideal calcium-magnesium ratio is 6.67 to 1. This balance is an indicator of insulin secretion, for example. Calcium is required for the release of insulin from storage in the Isles of Langerhans. Magnesium has an inhibiting action on insulin release. And therefore, the correct balance of these two minerals in the body is very important for blood sugar regulation. An abnormal calcium to magnesium ratio is frequently associated with hypoglycemia, disinsulinism, diabetes, colitis, heart problems, and finally, in extreme out-of-balance conditions, with cancer. So the calcium-magnesium ratio is another important one. There are various specific nutrients that will correct an abnormal calcium-magnesium ratio. For example, if the calcium is low relative to magnesium, we'd want to give nutrients that would raise calcium or lower magnesium, or both. We could give copper, which has an effect of raising calcium levels. We could lower potassium levels with various nutrients, which in turn will allow calcium levels to rise. We could lower magnesium levels by giving nutrients that raise sodium. This is because raising sodium levels will lower magnesium. Nutrients which raise sodium and hence lower magnesium are vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin B6, manganese, iron, copper, and several others. These are some of the ways that we would correct a low calcium to magnesium. We might also recommend foods that are high in copper, high in manganese, high in iron, and so forth. If the ratio were the other way, with a high calcium to magnesium, we might give a different set of nutrients to bring this under control. For example, giving potassium can lower calcium levels. Giving zinc can lower copper, which would lower calcium levels. Giving vitamin A or zinc also lowers sodium levels, which tends to raise magnesium levels. So this is the way that the calcium-magnesium ratio is worked on. It is important to correct all the ratios at the same time, by the way. Now we'll move on to the other two major electrolyte ratios, which constitute the oxidation rate. We've mentioned these ratios before. These are the calcium to potassium ratio and the sodium to magnesium ratio. Since these ratios are so associated with the oxidation types, it'll be more convenient to discuss them simply in terms of correcting fast and slow oxidation. We'll begin by talking about correction of excessively fast oxidation. Fast oxidation, you will remember, is defined as a calcium to potassium ratio of less than 4 to 1 and a sodium to magnesium ratio greater than 4.17 to 1. In other words, the potassium is elevated above the normal ratio to calcium, and the sodium is elevated above the normal ratio to magnesium. Correction of the fast oxidizer, again, depends on understanding the chemistry of fast oxidation. The fast oxidizer has an increased adrenal and thyroid activity. It is tricky because such a person may have an actual low blood thyroxine level, or a low T3, T4. This is apparently the case because the person is utilizing the hormones so rapidly that in the blood, the hormones may appear normal or low. One patient who consulted me was a fast oxidizer who was exhausted, and he was unhappy with the slowness of his progress, although he was doing better. He had extreme toxic metal poisoning. He went to a doctor for a thyroid test. It was found to be low, and he was placed on Synthroid. The Synthroid did give him energy, but I was unable to convince him that it would not balance his chemistry, remove the toxic metals, and make lasting, permanent recuperation in his health. The fast oxidizer burns sugar too rapidly. The excessive adrenal and high thyroid output is causing a rapid release of glucose into the bloodstream. Once in the cells, this glucose is too rapidly metabolized in the glycolysis cycle. Dr. Watson found empirically that fast oxidizers do very well on a high-fat diet. Why should this be so? There are three reasons. He found first that the fast oxidizers tend to burn carbohydrates very rapidly in the glycolysis cycle, but the slowdown point for them where they needed a boost was in the Krebs cycle. The Krebs cycle has to do with the burning of the end products of fat metabolism, which is acetate, combined with the major end product of the glycolysis cycle, which is oxaloacetate. Providing adequate amounts of dietary fat supports the Krebs cycle by providing enough acetate to combine with the available oxaloacetate from the glycolysis cycle. Thus, the Krebs cycle functions more efficiently in the fast oxidizer when the diet contains adequate amount of fat. A second reason why increased dietary fat is effective is because fat is a high-energy fuel, as we've stated earlier. Fat provides twice the amount of energy than either carbohydrate or protein. The fast oxidizer requires high energy levels because they are burning their available fuel rapidly. These are the people who are hungry an hour after eating in a Chinese restaurant. They do better on steak, potatoes, and sour cream. So dietary fat provides that energy that will keep them going. Otherwise, they are liable to go into hypoglycemia. Third, fats are more slowly absorbed from the digestive tract than protein or carbohydrate. One way to modify and slow down the fast oxidizers' oxidation rate and return them toward normal is to literally slow down the input rate of fuel to their cells. If these people are eating an excess of sugars and refined carbohydrate, which are rapidly absorbed and require very little digestion, the resultant glucose will go right into their cells and cause more rapid oxidation, more rapid burning, and that is their problem. Their body chemistry deteriorates from a rapid absorption and too rapidly utilized carbohydrates. The ingestion of fat is a little like metering the fuel, slowing down the fuel utilization, since fats require up to several hours for digestion. If we cut way down on the refined carbohydrates, sugars, and fruits, and let the fast oxidizers get their calories from fat and protein, a fast oxidizer will frequently calm down, their hypoglycemia will improve, their anxieties disappear, and they feel much better. Adequate dietary fat is one of the important principles of correction for the fast oxidizer. Animal fats, in particular, are preferred. Animal fats contain other factors which are particularly beneficial for the fast oxidizer. For example, butter contains vitamin A and the essential fatty acids, arachidonic acid. Margarine does not contain vitamin A, nor does it contain essential fatty acids. So the animal fats, in particular, are superior for the fast oxidizer. The vegetable oils contain more vitamin E, which is not as important for these people. This principle applies to the true fast oxidizer. There are situations, remember, when this will not apply strictly because many fast oxidizers are actually slow oxidizers under stress, but as a principle, fat is very important. A second principle of dietary correction for fast oxidizers centers around high calcium foods. Fast oxidizers have a low calcium level, ratio-wise to the potassium level. A good source of calcium is high-fat dairy products, such as cheese, cream cheese, and whole milk, since these are high in both fat and calcium. Fast oxidizers generally do well on dairy products, and they rarely develop an allergy to dairy products. Once I worked with a little boy who had asthma. I just assumed that milk allergies were causing everyone problems, and therefore he should be taken off milk. His mother had been told this by his pediatrician also. Even though he had a very low calcium on the hair chart, I kept him off milk. He didn't get well. His mother took him to another nutritionist who told him to drink milk. When he did this, he got well. So milk and the dairy products are generally very beneficial for fast oxidizers. This would include other dairy products such as blue cheese dressing, Roquefort dressing, and so forth. A third principle that Dr. Watson explored for fast oxidizers is that protein can be divided into high-fat proteins and low-fat proteins. The fast oxidizer does better on high-fat proteins. Protein can also be based on purine content. Purines are nucleoprotein bases. DNA contains the two purines, adenine and guanine, as well as two pyrimidine bases. Adenine is an important purine base and a constituent of ATP. For the fast oxidizer, foods that have a high purine content are essential. Foods high in purines are herring, salmon, tuna, mackerel, scallops, anchovies, and organ meats in general. Fast oxidizers do better on these foods. Other foods which are beneficial for the fast oxidizer include all members of the cabbage family, including cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, rutabagas. All of the previously mentioned foods contain anti-thyroid substances, goitrogens, which tend to slow down excessive thyroid activity. I want to restate so as to emphasize that fast oxidizers will improve by minimizing carbohydrate intake, fruits, sweets, breads, and cereals. The vitamins and supplements that are recommended for the fast oxidizer begin with the metabolic pack. The metabolic pack recommended by analytical research laboratories for the fast oxidizer is called the anti-stress pack. The particular balance of nutrients as found in the anti-stress pack will support specific pathways that are impaired in the fast oxidizer. This pack places special emphasis on calcium, magnesium, choline, inositol, B2, B12, copper, zinc, and other nutrients which are found to be specifically deficient in the fast oxidizer, or are essential for the retention of minerals that are normally found to be deficient in the fast oxidizer. The use of a multivitamin, multimineral tablets are not to be recommended in a loose way, because these general supplements contain nutrients that are good for a slow oxidizer and some that are good for a fast oxidizer. The end result is that they offset each other. Because the anti-stress pack does not contain B1, B2, B6, which are detrimental to the fast oxidizer in large quantities, the patient is recommended to take Endovite, which contains all the essential vitamins in small amounts. In addition to the metabolic pack, which provides the base nutrients for a specific deviant oxidation type, the fast oxidizer is often given calcium so as to lower a high potassium level, magnesium to lower a high sodium level, copper because it tends to increase calcium levels in the body, and zinc to lower a high sodium level. There are other products which may be recommended if high amounts of toxic metals are present. For example, the product EndoAC contains vitamin A and vitamin C together. The reason for giving both A and C together is that vitamin C raises sodium levels, which are generally too high in the fast oxidizer, while vitamin A tends to lower sodium levels. Vitamin A is also required for the fast oxidizer since it works with zinc to lower excessive sodium levels and is also synergistic with zinc. In certain cases, specifically in those with a sodium-potassium inversion, vitamin E may be recommended because vitamin E raises sodium levels. Vitamin B6 may be used in some cases to raise magnesium if sodium is low relative to potassium, because B6 will raise sodium as well as magnesium levels. NSAID is a specifically formulated digestive product designed for the fast oxidizer. It contains pancreatic and liver enzymes together with betaine hydrochloride in small quantities. A specific glandular product, thymidren, has been designed for the fast oxidizer. Thymidren contains a combination of thymus and adrenal substance. Adrenal glandular is used to support the adrenal gland so as to prevent adrenal burnout, while thymus glandular serves to act as a brake on excessive adrenal activity. The thymus and the adrenals are normally antagonistic to each other. The protomorphogens, which is another word for glandular products, are given because they have a balancing effect on the endocrine glands. They don't stimulate, they balance. The thymus has an antagonistic effect on the adrenals. Therefore, by giving thymus in this product, we tend to regulate excessive adrenal activity. A fast oxidizer may also be given paramin, which is parathyroid glandular substance, along with various supporting nutrients. Paramin has the effect of slowing down and antagonizing excessive activity of the thyroid gland. Occasionally, other products are used, such as Magora and Oracal. Magora is magnesium orotate. Oracal is calcium orotate. While these products do not contain a tremendous quantity of calcium and more magnesium, the calcium and magnesium in the products are highly absorbable due to their attachment to orotic acid. These products are used to help raise calcium and magnesium levels on a cellular level. This is a basic rundown of the products used in the fast oxidizer and why they're used. Now we'll turn to slow oxidation. The slow oxidizer presents with an entirely different problem than the fast oxidizer. Here we have basically a tired body. The thyroid, the adrenal glands are underactive. Usually they are exhausted from being overstressed. over an extended period of time. Often, a high amount of toxic metals are present, even though they may not show up on the first few tests. Energy pathways are deranged due to a deficiency of one or more of the trace elements. Because of low adrenal function in the slow oxidizer, the ability to convert glycogen to glucose is seriously impaired. The end result is low blood sugar levels, which convert to low energy levels. Also, the transport of nutrients across the cell membrane into the cell is impaired in the slow oxidizer because of low sodium and potassium levels. Therefore, nutrients, hormones, and blood sugar are not entering into the cells in optimal amounts, and elimination of cellular metabolic toxins is also impaired. The slow oxidizer's energy output is generally much lower. So the correction of slow oxidizer's energy deficit requires a different approach from that used for the fast oxidizer. As far as diet is concerned, Dr. Watson found empirically that slow oxidizers do well on carbohydrates and proteins and poorly on fats. Carbohydrates are beneficial because the slow oxidizer cannot readily release glucose into the blood from the glycogen stored in the liver. Therefore, they tend to rely on sugars directly from the intestinal tract. When slow oxidizers are tired, they often crave sweets because of the readily absorbable sugar present in such goodies. Sugar will go directly into the bloodstream. They may also crave alcohol, too, for the same reason. Sugar and alcohol provide the slow oxidizer with instant energy. Because of the need for rapid energy, we recommend that the slow oxidizer eat a high-carbohydrate diet. However, the complex carbohydrates are better for these individuals, inasmuch as they provide a more sustained energy release. If one is eating sugar, honey, and fruit, which are all simple carbohydrates, they get very rapid spurts of glucose into the bloodstream, which can unbalance the system and put more strain on pancreas and other organs. But a moderate amount of fruit and natural sweeteners is fine. It must be kept in mind that the slow oxidizer cannot tolerate fats very well. One reason is that dietary fat slows the emptying time of a meal from the stomach and intestine. The other reason is that an excessive amount of fat further slows down the oxidation rate. Slow oxidizers are in desperate need of protein. This is because protein has a stimulatory effect on the metabolic rate. Depending upon the degree of slow oxidation, the slow oxidizer will often gradually lose his taste for protein, particularly beef protein. The slower the rate becomes, the greater is their tendency toward the eating of a vegetarian diet. These people often don't desire protein for biochemical reasons. One reason is that the slow oxidizer often accumulates excess copper in the liver. The eating of protein will cause excessive copper to be released from storage. And if copper release is rapid, free-floating anxieties develop and the person feels uncomfortable. However, in spite of the lack of appetite for protein, these people do need protein. The protein recommended for the slow oxidizer should be the low-fat type and the low-purine types of protein. Research indicates that a high-purine diet is detrimental for the slow oxidizer. The most beneficial proteins are eggs, fish, especially the white or lighter-colored fish, chicken, turkey, or other fowl, except duck, which is high in fat, rabbit, lean meat, and legumes. These people can also eat seeds and nuts, but in small quantity because of the high fat content found particularly in nuts. Certain nuts are also high in copper, and these should be avoided. Soybeans, while high in protein, are also high in copper, and therefore are less desirable for slow oxidizers with a high copper level. Dairy products are usually contraindicated for the slow oxidizer because of their high fat and calcium content. A high fat, high calcium diet is conducive to slowing down metabolism. They inhibit both thyroid and adrenal activity. Slow oxidizers are particularly allergic to dairy products. People may be born as fast oxidizers And at the time, mother's milk is an ideal food. However, if the metabolic rate slows down as we grow older, which is frequent, milk is no longer a good food. About 80% of adults, at least, are slow oxidizers. We have a concept of allergies in this science, which is that if you have an excess of a substance in your tissues, such as calcium, you will tend to be allergic to foods containing that substance. So slow oxidizers may be allergic to dairy foods. They do better on vegetable oils than they do on animal fats. There are individual variations, and there are degrees of slow oxidation to keep in mind. Summing up the dietary principles for the slow oxidizer, they are high protein of the low-fat, low-purine type, moderate amount of unrefined carbohydrates, because carbohydrate provides a quick source of energy, and a low-fat diet. Roughage is also usually very important for the slow oxidizer because they have a tendency to constipation. The roughage may be in the form of bran or raw vegetables or psyllium or another type of product. The supplements for the slow oxidizer, as to be expected, are quite different from those recommended for the fast metabolizer. The metabolic pack recommended for the slow oxidizer is called MegaPan. Dr. Watson found that slow oxidizers have an increased need for certain specific members of the B-complex vitamins. Individuals who respond favorably to mega doses of B1 are generally slow oxidizers. A fast oxidizer cannot tolerate large amounts of vitamin B1. They usually become hyper and jittery, because B1 speeds up an already overactive metabolism. As to be expected, the slow oxidizer can greatly benefit from the B-complex, particularly B1, B3, and B6, because these particular vitamins speed up the oxidation rate and support the glycolysis cycle. Minerals which generally prove detrimental to the slow oxidizer are calcium and magnesium, because they're usually already high relative to sodium and potassium. As a result, MegaPan was formulated to be low in calcium and magnesium, high in the B-complex, and low in copper. The slow oxidizer often has excessively high copper levels. Many multivitamins on the market today contain excessive amounts of copper, calcium, and magnesium, and that is one major reason why many people don't get well using multivitamins. In addition to the metabolic pack, which has all the other minerals that are needed, such as chromium, manganese, and zinc, the slow oxidizer is often given potassium. Potassium is proven to be effective in raising low sodium levels and will help lower excessively high calcium and magnesium levels. Potassium is helpful in improving both adrenal and thyroid function and is of great importance in the transport of nutrients across the cell membrane. So potassium is essential for many important functions for the slow oxidizer. Manganese is usually very critical for the slow oxidizer because it raises sodium levels by enhancing adrenal activity. All nutrients which raise sodium levels are very important for the slow oxidizer. Vitamin B6, vitamin C, vitamin E, manganese, and several others are given. Iron may be given, although as copper and zinc metabolism becomes normalized, iron levels will generally come up on their own, because iron metabolism, heme synthesis, and other aspects of it are dependent on proper amounts of copper and zinc. This is why iron pills may sometimes be ineffective. The digestive aid that is given to the slow oxidizer is betaine hydrochloride pepsin. Because without adequate level of sodium potassium available, hydrochloric acid production and secretion is diminished. This low level of hydrochloric acid secretion in the stomach during a meal impairs protein digestion. Therefore, protein is not broken down into amino acids adequately, and minerals must be bound to amino acids to be absorbed. If they are not bound to amino acids, they cannot be adequately absorbed. This is part of the problem for the slow oxidizer. Also, certain minerals, such as iron and calcium, require an acid medium to be absorbed, And so sufficient hydrochloric acid aids in the absorption of iron and calcium. The protomorphogens, or glandulars, essential for the slow oxidizer, is the adrenal substance. Ovadren is given when the copper level is low. Endodren is given when the copper level is high. Another product that is especially beneficial to the slow oxidizer is Spartan MK. This is a product that was developed years ago by Wyeth Laboratories for the French army fighting in the Sahara Desert during World War II. It contains potassium and magnesium aspartate. The aspartate form is very readily absorbed and assimilated. Also, the aspartic acid can be easily converted to oxaloacetic acid, which is essential for optimal energy production. It is an excellent energy product. A thyroid glandular, not thyroid hormone, may be helpful to some slow oxidizers who are having severe problems with their thyroid gland. Occasionally, they may need to go on thyroid hormone or adrenal cortical extract when the problem is very, very severe. However, most of the time, if we just give the right nutrients to balance the oxidation rate and support the energy cycles, people will come out of the low energy state. And if they've already been on thyroid hormone, they will slowly be able to cut down and not need their thyroid hormone anymore. It is of utmost importance for slow oxidizers to get a lot of rest. Both fast and slow oxidizers suffer from fatigue. The fast oxidizer spends its energy too rapidly, thus depleting it and feeling tired temporarily. The slow oxidizer is on the tired side all the time and requires a great deal of rest. This is a summary, then, of the diet and the supplements for the slow oxidizer. There's another group of supplements which may be given to both types. Renamide is raw kidney freeze-dried, a glandular product that is helpful for certain toxic metals and for kidney function. GB3 contains bile acids, and which is a liver and gallbladder cleanser and can help remove toxic metals. Also, Nigris S, which contains black radish, a substance high in organic sulfur, may be given to support the liver in helping to dump toxic metals. Both types may be given Lincomin, which contains lymph, thymus, and spleen, and supportive nutrients, if there is a low sodium to potassium ratio, or a very high sodium to potassium ratio, or if there is an infection. The computer will also print out other special glandular products if the hair analysis results and symptoms point to a specific organ problem. For example, if there is a prostate problem, there is a product called Prostacine, which contains prostate gland. If the results point to a heart problem or a diagnosis is given of heart disease, there is a heart glandular substance called CardioMet, and so forth. Correction now of mixed oxidation. The correction of mixed oxidation is a little more complex. The metabolic pack formulated for the correction of mixed oxidation is called glycopan. Glycopan contains various nutrients in moderate dosage and balance. Glycopan doesn't push the chemistry one way or the other. It contains adrenal substance for adrenal support. It is designed mainly to stabilize a mixed oxidizer's erratic metabolism. That is their most important need. Beyond the use of glycopan, the products recommended will depend on what the individual mineral levels are on the hair chart. For example, if there is a low calcium relative to potassium, then substances will be given to lower potassium levels that will help bring up the calcium, and so forth. In time, the mixed oxidizer will change to either a fast or a slow oxidizer. It can happen quickly, or it can take a year or two. Another metabolic type is the balanced oxidizer. One note of caution here is that people who appear balanced, meaning their ratios are close to normal, may actually be just compensating very effectively for many toxic metals. Therefore, I always warn people, if they come out balanced on a hair chart, to be prepared, because they may go into slow or fast oxidation as we start to correct them. And this is because as toxic metals are dumped, the compensations change, the adaptations are removed, and your balanced oxidizer will feel particularly unpleasant because they are used to being balanced. They're used to good energy, and if you suddenly throw them into slow oxidation, they will feel it more than others. A few other topics to mention are that symptomatic correction may be necessary in addition to this program. Most of this nutrition program is not symptomatic. It is at a very deep level, but if someone is constipated, they may not be able to wait a year. You may need to recommend psyllium seeds, enemas, colonics, herbal laxatives, or other methods. So symptomatic correction has a place and can be used along with the program as long as it's not the focus. Another point is lifestyle correction, and Take 5 talks about this, but lifestyle can make a big difference. Finally, it is important to reduce all kinds of stress, and so other healing modalities may be important too in correction. I don't like to be single focused with nutrition, and I encourage people to have their structure balanced, have their energy flows balanced, go for counseling if they feel they need it, to work on attitudes and emotions. I'm not talking about going for therapies that are invasive or that weaken the body, but those therapies that balance and strengthen can work very nicely with the nutrition program.